Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 4th of September 2011. My name's TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Ian Foster and Rev Stan. Okay, first we're going to talk about Faith Machine at the Royal Court. This opened this week to generally positive reviews. This is a play by Alexi K. Campbell, who has written sort of two plays before.
The Pride.
Yeah, sorry, yeah.
Apology.
Yeah, Pride and Apology, yeah. This play is about, well, essentially, I suppose, about the relationship between a campaigning journalist whose father is a bishop and a young writer who gets into advertising. And that's one part of this. And they talk an awful lot about the state of religion in this play. Now, Ian, what did you think of this? And if there's anything else you'd like to tell us about it?
I think I was actually quite disappointed with it in the end. I think it came with a lot of baggage for me because I saw the Pride in Sheffield earlier this year and absolutely loved it. And so I think I was anticipating something that was equally well written as that, and I didn't feel that Kay Campbell's writing here is as strong. He's making the range of the play is quite epic. We shift around, I think it's from 1998 to modern day, from New York to London to the Greek island. The scenes are all in different orders, and his scope is so sort of epic, but in a sprawling way, and the way in which he's writing, we're raising the issues of homosexuality in the Anglican Church, or the ethics of working for a company with a dodgy human rights record, and the sort of personal responsibility versus the social responsibility for the world that we all carry. It's all just a bit. I don't know. I didn't feel.
I found it rather Shavian, I suppose I can use that word, but very, very talky. People are just talking at each other all the time, but it's not moving forward enough.
Yeah, because they're not. He hadn't really developed characters. He developed ideological positions, and so I thought the character of Hayley Atwell character, Sophie, was it? No, I didn't feel she was a real person at all. She was just this dreamy liberal person, collection of ideas. And the way that people were talking to each other didn't really have the complexity of that I was anticipating. I think the way that it's all a bit too didactic as well. It's like there's no ambiguity to it. This is right. This is right. It's very much a case of this is the way that we ought to be. Whereas in the Pride, there was no sort of coming to a conclusion. It was ugly. It was messy. Difficult, and that's life. Here, there isn't that same sense of a realistic sense, I think, that I was anticipating. And so I have to say, I ended up being quite disappointed. It's extremely well acted. There's no doubting that. But no.
Fine. Okay, fine. I did think they had an awful lot of characters who were sort of telling each other what the other person thought. That was a bit odd.
Yeah.
The sort of that kind of preparedness. Rev Stan, what did you think of this?
Similar to Ian, really. I mean, I sort of enjoyed the journey, but I tweeted at the first interval because rather bizarrely it has two intervals, which I think is a little bit excessive. That I was enjoying the journey, but I wasn't sure where it was going, and I don't think it actually went anywhere. I think he is better at doing more intimate stuff and the more intimate scenes, and I think it just was like he was taking a broad brush approach. Because with the Pride, when you have only got the four characters, and you are looking at a particular topic, I think he's much better at that when it's all tighter. And there was much that I enjoyed in it. I didn't sort of I didn't sort of hate it as I was watching it, but I just sort of came out feeling a bit, and the point of that was, I thought that final scene as well was just so cheesy. It was just completely unnecessary.
It's horrendous.
Yes, it was just almost like tacked on, and it's sort of painting Sophie as this sort of, you know, almost goddess, like, you know, she was so brilliant, she was so nice, and everyone should be like her. And I just thought, oh, give me a bucket, I want to throw up in it. But there were bits of it that I did enjoy. There were little scenes and stuff throughout which I thought were well done, but on the whole, it's not his best work.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it was really personal enough. I think you know, because I think with a Pride, and to a certain extent with a Apologia, they seemed to come out of a rather more personal place than this. This is more him. You know, it felt as if he was sort of looking at it from the outside a bit too much, rather than experiencing it.
Yeah. Can I ask you two? I was really annoyed that in the final scene they had to take a moment to explain what the title of the play meant.
Like, yes.
There was no foreshadowing of that. There was no sort of sense of this is what a Christmas scene is. And then it just felt really, really clunky. And I just felt
did.
Like, did you just put that in at the last minute? Because someone actually said to you, what the f is a faith machine?
Was he quoting somebody else? I couldn't remember if he was quoting a real person or he was quoting something that a character is supposed to have said off stage, which would have been really terrible. I couldn't remember that. I had a feeling
it was a young girl. It was a young girl who said it.
Yeah. But I couldn't remember if she was quoting, because she was quoting somebody. And I couldn't remember if she was sort of quoting someone like Richard Dawkins or she was quoting, you know, somebody like Sophie.
And, I might have a look then.
Because I had a feeling it was a real person, because it would have been really unacceptable if it was sort of somebody, you know, somebody in the play and it had been cut out at some point and they felt they had to put it back in. But they obviously had to put it in somewhere. To explain that, you know, he felt he needed to explain the title, which is a bit awkward.
I completely agree. I thought that bit was really, really clunky. Just it almost made me laugh when I heard that bit.
Yeah,
roll my eyes. It's just dreadful, dreadful.
Right. Okay. So we're gonna move on now to talking about 3 Days in May, which was at the Richmond Theatre. This is about the 3 days, the three particular days when Dunkirk, in 1940, when Dunkirk was just starting. It's about 2 weeks after Churchill has become Prime Minister, taking over from Neville Chamberlain, and it features a debate that the War Cabinet, the sort of five-member inner cabinet, have in about whether they look to see if they can get terms from Germany via Italy, or whether they keep fighting. And it features Warren Clark as Winston Churchill. And Ian, what did you make of this?
I really, really disliked it in the end. I didn't think it was particularly good or entertaining or educational whilst I was watching it. I was bored during it. And then as I was writing my review afterwards, I got increasingly angry, because the more I was thinking about it, the more it really stuck in my core. It's not a piece of theatre in any sense, because it's a set of meetings around the War Cabinet table, which are really quite dull. There's hardly any characterisation in there. It doesn't take the opportunity to actually delve into this the question, because we know the history, we know what happened, and we know that Churchill's approach was right. But there's such a revisionist attitude to the way that it presented, which kind of comes from Churchill's own biography, his own account of things, and presenting his presentation of himself as a heroic visionary, which which is all very well, but hindsight's a wonderful thing. And the opportunity here is to actually look at the reason why appeasement was considered to be a genuine route that could have been taken by the government, because it was. And but we don't investigate that, and it just so sort of I don't know. It just Warren Clark's performance is just an impersonation in the end. It's extremely effective, but because he's not given anything to work with, it's just an impersonation. The way that the play is written by Ben Brown, is it? It's like a lecture. He got a narrator, the poor James Alper. He's a private secretary to Churchill, his office. He's forced to sort of narrate, explain who all the characters are at the beginning. He doesn't need to do a tidy wrapping up at the end. It's just it's an appallingly written play, and in the end, it's just a piece of hagiography that has absolutely no historical value whatsoever. In a nutshell,
I wasn't quite as angry as you about it. I mean, I did see the flaws in this. I mean, this is apparently this is on tour at the moment. They are hoping it will come into the West End, and it might do on the, you know, because people want to see Warren Clark playing Winston Churchill.
But, yeah, it's his first stage role for nearly a decade, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly interesting from that point of view, but yeah, it was, as you say, there's not enough meat on this. There's not enough. It's being too scared to really stray away from the writing. I mean, it did certainly has tried to defend these people, but of course, this isn't really mentioned by Churchill in his memoirs. This incident that they're talking about here, this cropped up when the after the 30-year rule kicked in. So in the early 1970s, people found out that this was being considered at the time.
Yes, and, you know, Chamberlain's widow, quite rightly, you know, we'd allowed the opportunity to sort of say, actually, you know, Chamberlain wasn't, it's not as black and white as it's usually presented.
I mean, you're right about they didn't show understand the sheer horror that people had of war. That's what made appeasement so attractive to so many people in the 1930s. It was that there was this total horror of the idea of war, and that we shouldn't get into it, and we should find other ways of doing things. Okay, we're going to move on to talk about a play you saw, Ian, The Mercy Seat. This is a Neil LeBute play that was done by the Almeida, must have been about 7 years or 8 years ago. This concerns a couple in a flat who, one of whom has, pretended to be a victim of 9/11, or, you know, been in one of the Twin Towers or something. Yes.
Kind of. The play is set in the apartment building of Abby, who is having an affair with. Ooh, bear with me a second. Can I start that again?
Yeah, sure.
The play is set in the apartment of Abby, who's having an affair with Ben. She's his boss. She's older than him, but they work in one of the in the World Trade Center. They decided to have an illicit liaison in the morning, and it just so happens that that's what saves them. We join the play the morning after, where Ben has posed the question to Abby, shall we take this opportunity and run away from our lives and pretend that he's been killed, and he's married, he's got children, and so he says, let's go and live a simple life in the Bahamas somewhere, and take this opportunity in the face of tragedy. So I mean, it's not about nice people, but it's a Neil Abute play, so you wouldn't really expect that. And it had a lot of controversy attached to it when it was first written in 2002, because it was one of the first theatrical responses to 9/11. And it's quite interesting looking back on it now, sort of 10 years away. The 9/11 isn't integral to the play at all. It forms the backdrop. In this production, there's a TV with rolling news footage on it. But it's only really the trigger to this sort of twisted relationship where it's full of LeBute's trademark dialogue, very sharp wordplay between this fiercely intelligent woman who's sort of seeing her her opportunity to get the man that she wants, but also she's clinging on to this job that she climbed up the ladder for 20 years, and she's at the top of her game, but she's having to lose a lot in the face of him. She sees as not having to lose a lot, even though he's having to leave his wife and family. So it's extremely... It's an hour and 40 minutes, I think, straight through, played out in real time. And so it's not dramatic in that sense, but I really enjoyed it because the naturalism of the dialogue is so effective. It's the ebb and flow of this relationship as they constantly squabble and fight and get back together and pull apart again. It's really well done. The acting is excellent. And, I was quite impressed. And, as I said, it's interesting seeing it with a bit of distance, the criticism that it perhaps attracted in its earlier run in 2002. It's not really justified in that respect. I think there's still perhaps a little too much sensitivity about it. And I guess you could argue that LeBute was a little opportunistic himself in attaching that event to a play that he's written. But I'd recommend it. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, this is on at the Pleasance in...
The Pleasance in Caledonian Road.
Yeah, yeah. Right. It does sound interesting. I thought the problem people had with it before is that they just didn't like either of the characters, really. I seem to recall that's what the major complaint was.
I was reading
insensitivity, but obviously if you've got...
I was reading the review of the American production with Sigourney Weaver, where they were criticising the detail about that you couldn't use cell phone because cell phones weren't working. You know, the criticisms were about it wasn't a realistic depiction of living in New York the day after it had happened.
Oh, right.
When, you know, that's not necessarily... He's not necessarily aiming for a realistic depiction of...
Yeah, I mean, it was more about the story of the relationship,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, well, now move on to The Kitchen. This has just started previewing at the National Theatre on the Olivier stage. And this is Arnold Wesker's play. I think it might be his first play, is it, Ian?
According to Wikipedia, yes.
Yes, his first play. I think he wrote it for a competition. And it worked reasonably well. I'm not sure if it won, but it did quite well. The thing about this is really almost a real... Well, not a real... It's not exactly a real-time play because there's compression, but it is about the kitchen of a large, rather... it would be fast food before they were fast food. It's a rather a dull restaurant, but they serve thousands of people a day, thousands of covers every day. So it's madness, complete madness in there. And I think it's sort of, this is the kind of restaurant that you'd have before you had sort of fast food outlets in the 1950s. And it's the relationships within the actual within the kitchen of the restaurant. Now, this is This play, for me, I found it very insubstantial. By the time you've introduced everybody, they've done a lot of choreography and a lot of fake cooking. The only real thing about the cooking were the naked flames on the burners, which I didn't quite understand.
Were they actual flames?
Well, they look pretty real from what
I've seen. They did. I couldn't make out if they actually were.
But by the time they've introduced all these people, and there must be I don't know 12 or something cooks in there, and another 10 waiters and waitresses. By the time you've got all those people in, and you start focusing on just maybe the sort of a core number of about 6 people that you're really interested in, the play's over. It's very brisk. It's very quick. I found it very stylish. It's a very nicely put together play. Very well choreographed. Some really nice pieces. There's a nice bit of projection whenever somebody orders something, which always looks quite good fun. But it really wasn't. There really wasn't anything to it apart from that. I felt. It's a fascinating thing to see. But tell me, what do you think about it, Ian?
I'm 100% with you there. It's like a souffle that it sinks as soon as it comes out of the oven. It finishes and then you think, what just actually happened? Because as you say, the focus is on the sort of presentation of a working day rather than a dramatization of anything, and so. It's just a lot of fuss without any real content. And I think this is a shame because the little glimpses that we do get have the potential to be more interesting where they further develop. The main character, if you can say that, is a young German chef called Peter. Now, we're in the late 50s, so he's having to deal with people's prejudices still carrying over from the war. And this is a kitchen full of other nationalities, with Jewish people as well. And so there's little hints of things there, but they're never more than that. They're just hints. Likewise with the women, there's a strong sort of
There's
abortion and issues around that, which are sort of hinted at, again, not developed. And so I just couldn't see what the ultimate point of the play was. It's not really representative it doesn't represent the world of work or industrial relations or anything, as a community within itself. And the hint it gives you of the lives of the working classes in the late 1950s just aren't enough to justify it in the end, for me. I just thought, no.
Yeah,
it has these moments of visual grace, and it does look stunning at times, but there's just nothing to it.
Yeah, I did think that they could have. This is sort of thing where you could have made it into a sort of a 6-part, hour-long television program. You know, one of those things where they do a workplace and they take it apart. Like trying to think of one, but the sort of thing Debbie Horsfield used to be very good at, and that sort of thing could have worked. You know, it could have been a lot longer and concentrated on too few people. I think that it's going to get pretty good reviews though, because I think that people are. People are going to say, well, this is a classic, obviously. You know, this is on Wesker, and he hasn't been back on it yet.
Decreed that it's Wesker's year for whatever.
Yeah, yes.
Hasn't it?
Yeah, so they're going to be sort of reverent towards the play. They're not going to criticise it like we do, because to us it's a new play. You know, I don't think either of us have ever seen it before. Although I missed the opportunity to see it when I was on the Royal Court about 10 years ago. But I think the critics are going to be very polite about it, because to them it's a classic. But I think that if you're going to see a new play, you're going to think that this isn't enough, and you'd rather see something more substantial. because it really, I mean, it was almost kind of disappointing after seeing Chicken Soup with Barley earlier this year, and seeing that there's something really, there's a lot of real power in Wesker's writing, and this just sort of didn't feel representative of it, really. Mm. It's just an excuse to hang waitresses off wires at some point. Okay, all right, well, thanks for that.
No problem.
Okay, next we're going to talk to Rev Stan. You went to the Tempest this week. Now, this is the big new Tempest, which I think Ian and I haven't bothered to book for because we're poor and we can't afford it. But this is being done at the Theatre Royal Haymarket, and stars Ray Fiennes. And it sounds like a rather interesting production, directed by Trevor Nunn. Although I have heard one or two fairly negative things about it by some people. But you managed to get a day seat in there, didn't you?
Yes. Now, the thing you need to know about day seats for this is normally at the Theatre Royal Haymarket, they have about 20 day seats, which are the first couple of rows. But as I found out when I was queuing up on Saturday and was 10th in the queue, they've reduced the number to 9. For this production, and it is one ticket per person, so you can't get someone to go along and queue for you. I'm afraid you have to be there in person to get your ticket. But I did manage to. I queued again in the week, and I got my day seat. The other thing you need to know is the stage is built out as an overhang. So because the day seats are on the front row, the stage is virtually in your face, and it gets worse as the front row is curved. So the closer you are to either end, the closer the stage is to your face. So if you don't like sitting with you know, getting a crick in your neck, then it's probably not for you. Although the tickets are only £15, and considering the seats behind you are about 60, 65 quid, I think a pain in the neck is definitely worth it. In terms of the production, I know we'll probably talk about it when a few more people have seen it. I'm not a massive fan of Ray Fiennes. I think he is very good at being intense, but he doesn't have a lot of warmth in his performance. And interestingly, I was talking to an American tourist who queued up on Saturday and didn't get day seats along when I didn't get a day seat. And we bumped into each other last night at Much Ado About Nothing. And she had actually got day seats another night. And she said that she felt that he was acting in a different play to everybody else. And I quite agree. There were parts of it that just didn't gel. There's some absolutely fantastic stuff in it. There's a hell of a lot of wire work. It's all very, very well done. But there were just bits of it that just didn't quite gel together. And it does feel that, like, Ray Fiennes puts a lot of effort into his performance, but you can see the effort that's going into it. And it just feels like he should be acting in a different play. I think Prospero needs to be quite revengeful, but he also needs to have a tender side, a fatherly side towards Miranda, and he also has to, you have to believe that he's capable of forgiveness, and I don't think that came across. But anyway, I won't go on. That's my brief summary, but I did overall enjoy it.
Okay, yeah, I mean, it is opening fully. I mean, there's press night, I think, is Monday or Tuesday next week, isn't it?
Tuesday.
So it is... we are fairly close to the wire, so they should be getting it right, or they should be getting it to where they want it to be.
Mm.
You can get in touch with the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast at AYULTP on Twitter, going to our Facebook page, the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast, or by going on the web at AYU-LondonTheatre.org. Thank you. Goodbye.